Hello and welcome again to the wide world of wargaming. As always, I am your host, Alex Gonzalez, and with me are our hosts, John and Garrett. And back again after his long vacation, back from overseas, we do have the French overlord himself, Jeremy Vessier. Jeremy, what is on your workbench?
I am assembling some dreadnoughts for Iron Hands because I'm going to give 40k a shot since I'm way in the lead for ITC points. I mean, I'm not number one right now, but we'll see after SoCal Open. That's what's on my workbench, Alex. As you can tell, my trip has not lowered my ego at all. What's on your workbench, Garrett?
Well, I don't really have much right now from last week. I did a mad dash and built all of my Sylvaness stuff and got them over to my friend so he can start painting them for me. I was able to get a game of Blood Bowl in. So I built my Elf Union team and having some fun with that. Otherwise, I'm getting back in this. I feel like I'm still getting back in the swing of things after Nova. I'm kind of waiting for the next two books to be released before I kind of dive headlong into planning and prepping and everything so I can get a handle on reading everything. So I'm kind of in this weird space where I'm just like waiting for everything to release, and then I'm going to dive headlong, analyze stuff, and probably start doing a lot more things moving forward. What about you, John? What are you drinking tonight?
Hey, how you doing there, Garrett and Jeremy and Alex? Well, first off, I am enjoying a little bit of the Glenlivet 12 single malt scotch whiskey. Knowing that Jeremy was back in town, I thought I would enjoy a little bit of scotch, thinking that maybe he would be enjoying some on the other end and we could have a toast throughout the evening here.
Unfortunately for you, John, I'm on a diet and no whiskey unless it's a social event for me right now.
Oh, wow. And we're not socializing? I mean, you know, justifications can be made.
It's not an event.
Maybe like 10 push-ups and then dive into the podcast. Okay, it's okay. I'll have a second one for you, and I'll enjoy it twice as much just for you, my friend. Other than that, I continue to be building some Primaris Marines. You know, earlier this year we had all the contrast paints released, and so I got myself a fine contrast paint collection. You know, GW is wonderful in that we can collect paint brushes, paints, models, all kinds of stuff, books. So I decided to put my contrast paint collection to work in painting some Primaris. Other than that, I played a game of 40K against local guy Michael Kopak. I, like you, Garrett, am kind of still in my post-Nova, taking it light for Age of Sigmar. But today is also the last day of September. And so come October, going to dive pretty hard back into playing some AOS. In fact, like right now, I've got three different people that have messaged me in the last couple days wanting to get competitive games in, practice for SoCal, and then another guy actually starting to practice for the Las Vegas Open. So we'll kind of get those things going. And other than that, harvested some more of the Golden Carolina Reapers and brought those to game night. So I gave some of those to Mr. Michael Trebino, and he and his wife enjoyed those, said they were quite tasty. And then our own teammate, Matt, also received some of the Carolina Reapers. And I don't know if you guys saw it on our team page there, but he just posted a video of him trying those peppers out. I will say that while he approached it with a little bit of caution like I did, I was kind of hoping for a face-first experience. So he burnt his face a little, but not quite as much as I had hoped. What about you guys? Alex, I think the next set of Carolina Reapers that ripen up, I'm going to send up to you up there in the Great Northwest. Are you looking forward to giving those a try?
Oh, I'm definitely looking forward to that. And I also saw the video with Matt. You know, who wants to live forever, first of all? So right. if you do send some my way, I will have a video where I just have the whole thing. Not going to take some nibbles. Going to dive straight for, you know, head first into it. You know, win or lose, probably lose. But, you know, this is the choices we make.
Ultra baller.
I mean, you got it, right? I mean, wow. If you're going to be nice enough to go through the time to make the pepper, I mean, I'll be nice enough to give you some entertainment.
Excellent. Well, I will say that of all the people I know, you're probably one of the few that, one, probably could actually handle it, and two, is baller enough to even give that a try. So I look forward to it. It'll probably be about another week before the next set are ripe.
I will record this event so we can post it on the Facebook chat.
We can put it on our Facebook page. Everyone can see the supper. It'll be fun. It'll be fun. Nice. A little bit of voyeurism here. What is on my workbench? The same thing that's been on my workbench all month. Bunch of Chaos Knight stuff. My Nighthaunt army isn't going to really see any additions anytime soon. And of course, next month I will probably, I'm looking at like 70-30. It's likely that I'll start Ossark Reapers, but I mean, we don't know any of the rules yet. We have zero information because the hype train right now for Games Workshop in terms of Age of Sigmar is elsewhere, at least for now. On my workbench itself, I have some iced coffee that I'm finishing up from a little earlier. And I myself am also drinking some scotch, but it's actually added in with a few other things. A good friend of mine left some scotch here when I had a surprise party for my fiance a couple of weeks ago. So I decided I was going to make myself a hot toddy because it's been a cold day.
Ooh, so, nice.
Yeah, you know, didn't have brandy. And, you know, scotch works fine, especially when it's not like a high-end scotch, you know. So ended up working out pretty well for me. But, in terms of workbench stuff right now, yeah. Nothing too much with Age of Sigmar. Later this week, I am going to be going up to Seattle to see our good friend Jack Ballard and get a battle report in with him from his YouTube channel, Rerolling One. So,
oh wow, that'll be fun.
A real fun time. Yeah, he's a great guy. You know, we've all had good experiences with him. He's a fun dude. He balls out pretty hard, and he's great at karaoke. But we have a lot here to talk about today. You know, we are going to be, you know, of course, touching base with our long lost co-host Jeremy, in addition to taking a look at a few new things that have come our way that we have neglected to discuss in these episodes in the last few weeks, including Gortek Grunderson, and of course, we're going to be talking a little bit about how the new War Scroll updates for the Cities of Sigmar armies. Even though the Battle Tome hasn't come out, the War Scrolls have been updated, and then there has been a lot of new information regarding Orc War Clans that we haven't really delved into either. So we're going to be taking just a closer look into that as well today. But starting off, Jeremy, you've been gone for a while. Where were you? What were you doing? And how do you feel?
Yeah, I was actually in the deep mountains meditating under a waterfall for my pending ITC victory. It's been quite a pleasure.
Alex, that's what you need to do to win, by the way. Just everybody take heart. A little Zen experience from the master. Le Bogeyman has the focus.
That's not what I was doing. Unfortunately, I decided to go spend some time with family and friends. I went to see a wedding, got to see the newborns, which was real cool. And then I spent like 5 days in London to go to the London GT. But unfortunately, my Fire Slayers did not make the trip with me. They weren't lost or nothing. They just they just, unfortunately, our good friend and co-host Matthew was doing some touch up on my bequest, and unfortunately I gave him the wrong date for shipping, and they arrived too late. Like literally as I was getting on the plane, they arrived at the house, which is that's okay. I mean, it was nice. I got to see some of our, I got to hang out with some of our local Bay Area friends for you guys, Nick, Hayden, and then Shane Rucky and Adrian and, you know, all those guys from down there. So it's cool seeing them in London. I got to pick up Gotrek Grunderson when I was up there. So that was cool. I'm a big, I'm a big Fire Slayer fan, and I was also my favorite faction in fantasy has always been the dwarves, but specifically the Slayer King. So I was always really excited. You know, Gotrek is just another one of like that line of models that I really like. You know, the whole naked dwarf man with giant axe and red hair. It just really hits the home for me for my Gaulish ancestors here.
Thank you, Jeremy.
We're going to a weird place with this one, my friend.
And I also picked up the book. Well, not the audiobook, but the actual, like, the Ghoul Slayer, I think it's called. And there was some cool, like, I mean, it was it was a fun story, like, especially like it was between Flesh Eaters and like Gotrek and his party. And the Flesh Eaters of a couple chapters were like literally talking to each, like as if they're like not Flesh Eaters. So it's kind of funny, like dialogue versus like the reality of what's happening, because it's like told from the perspective, like the simultaneous perspective. Like the chapter before is from like the people are getting like completely destroyed by the Flesh Eater, and then the next chapter is them like explaining them like, you know, basically driving out these barbarians out of their like homeland. And it's just a funny, like, kind of like, you know, it's a good book. I highly recommend it. But there is like, and for everybody who doesn't want to listen to this, spoiler alert, there's a massive hint that basically Grimnir is trying to take over Gotrek. So
wait, as what?
So as Gotrek keeps fighting and keeps like in like the long, as he basically goes kind of like Super Saiyan in okay. battle. And as the battle keeps going, he glows and glows and like his hair turns golden and he instead of red. And then he like basically like, you know, he looks like he's about to explode effectively. And it's basically Grimnir like slowly as he gets, you know, in the fury of battle, Grimnir is trying to like seep his way in and, you know, basically take like Gotrek.
Is it that, or is he like channeling the power of the god at that point, right? He's just so imbibed with the power that he's just glowing with that dwarfiness.
No, apparently the Gotrek is it's Grimnir basically, because Gotrek hates Grimnir, right? So Grimnir and the fluff basically lost to Gotrek, but then tricked him into going into the realms of chaos to meet his like end, right? And then turns out like that didn't happen. And so Gotrek really dislikes Grimnir, feels he like tricked him. There's a part in the book where he has this incredibly long battle. And at the end of the battle, like there's a part of his like, you know, mohawk that's like permanently golden now. So like, he knows Grimnir is like, he's like, he even says he's like losing himself inside every time he has these battles, like, and he knows Grimnir, like he can feel that like he's no longer being himself like during these battles. So it's a cool piece of fluff. And I'm hoping like, you know, even the War Scroll has like a rule called the Avatar Grimnir. So like, it's just eventually, you know, for Fire Slayer fans, you know, it's like, hey, Gotrek, he's probably not going to lose to Grimnir. He's probably going to beat Grimnir and then just become the god of, you know, their equivalent, you know, instead of becoming Grimnir, he's going to take Grimnir's title and power, basically.
Oh, I think that's what they're saying. Oh, that would be awesome. So Gotrek basically becomes a dwarven god. And within the sort of, say, the mortal realms and the realms of Age of Sigmar, this type of transformation is very possible. You know, there's multiple examples that we can point to. That's exciting. I like the idea. I mean, Gotrek being one of my favorite characters from the fiction of all time. I mean, all the Slayer books going back ad infinitum, right? Pretty amazing stuff. So I got to ask you, Jeremy, are you going to kind of do a golden hair on his mohawk on your Gotrek model? Was that a Forge World exclusive or something?
No, it was a Games Workshop like release. You can find it in store, and hopefully it's not a limited run. But I will be doing that, John. And you know, my dwarves are painted in like a dark iron type dwarf skin, so like they're darker like skin tone. I'm probably gonna keep Gotrek still the lighter skin tone because it doesn't really make sense to have him in the dark one. But
honestly, if you contrast him and make him all look like he's kind of going Super Saiyan, like that would. Really, it would contrast with your army and it would look pretty cool.
Yeah, so for me, Gotrek, and this is the competitive side of Jeremy coming out of here. I'm going to have him on the display board as like a, you know, a showcase piece, but he's never going to hit the table above my Fire Slayers. He's just...
Why is that?
Well, let's go into it.
Yeah, tell us. Because I tell you what, the internet is a buzz of how awesome and amazing he is, but I don't think the internet has any experience playing him. So tell us the truth, my friend.
Okay, so Gotrek suffers all the fundamental flaws of a Fire Slayer, which is that he's a 4-inch death ball machine, right? So the advantage of Fire Slayers in the new book that came out was the fact that you had a lot of ways to make them fast, like run and charge, you know, all these like abilities. Gotrek does not get to get any of those benefits. He's just moving 4 inches at a time. Now, you can be a cunning player and make it so that you're forcing him down an alleyway and just making him like basically like something eventually your opponent has to deal with. But that's going to be 2 or 3 turns, right? So by turn 3, like if Gotrek even gets into your opponent, like the opponent's line, like at that point, you might already be losing the game on points and never being given an opportunity to recover, especially since the game is an objective-based game and Gotrek doesn't really play to the objectives very well. Now, granted, if he hits anything, he's just about to kill it. And it's also incredibly hard to kill him, mostly because he, for those who don't know, he reduces all damage taken by any ability or attack down to 1. So the guy only has 8 wounds, but he lowers. And like, if you have an ability that does D6 mortal wounds, it only does 1 mortal wound. If you only have an ability that does D6 damage or whatever, or abilities that do, like, it doesn't matter. Just reduce every one of those attacks, only does 1 damage. That's assuming you get through his 4-up save. And on top of that, he has a 3-up shrug. So whatever
you do,
he's going to like negate it on a 3-up. So yeah, cool. He's tough. It's very fluffy, right? Once again, 4-inch movement. If you are a very smart player and facing Gotrek and you have any spells available to you that like, block his movement, like endless spells, or the ability to remove run from his, like if you can just remove run out of him, aka the lightning vortex from the Skaven book, you can literally just make him unusable for your opponent. And the reason why that sucks is because the model itself is 520 points. He's more than a quarter of, like barely more than a quarter of somebody's army. So like losing 25% to just basically a player who's just better at maneuvering or straight up just has a spell that like makes you half movement.
Yeah, half movement, half run, half charge, like yeah. I'm always rocking, right?
Yeah, it's just like he suffers the same problems as Fire Slayer, except he actually doesn't play on the objectives. So at least Fire Slayers, you can still play to the objectives. And once you get there, like you don't necessarily have to go further than the objectives. Unfortunately, Gotrek doesn't have that. Like his job is to kill things. It's not to sin on objectives. So
right. Well, he's definitely one of those things too, where nobody's going to be charging your lines when you have him back there. You know, not he's going to kill anything that comes in. But I think Fire Slayers already have that ability, so they're not really afraid of anyone charging their lines to begin with.
Yeah, I was I was going to say that I think a useful way to use him, which doesn't work in Fire Slayers, is. He is a great like countercharge unit and area denial unit, so you can use him to like greatly protect a back line of shooting things, because like anything that gets near that, he can kind of like create a zone of like, if you get near me to attack these guys, I'm just going to murder you. And so I think there's ways to use him, but not in a Fire Slayer's army, because as Jeremy is pounding into our brains, is that he has all the same weaknesses as a Fire Slayer. So he kind of is really hard to shove into a Fire Slayer army, because it's like they don't need more melee destruction, honestly. So I think there's some like tricky defensive kind of counterpunch ways you can use him in like a Cities of Sigmar army, or maybe an Idaneth army or something, but definitely not a Fire Slayer's army.
So the other build you can do him in, and this is for those in our audience want to know, like really want to use him and want to know the best way I think you can use him, is you put him in a Deepkin army using the Iron Arc Enclave. The Iron Arc Enclave is a sub-allegiance for Deepkin that grants your allies the Deepkin table, the Tides of Battle. And
he's
so it
too
means,
many points to be an ally though.
No, he no. has a he has a, sorry, John doesn't know. He has an ability, his points, while greater than 400, he also has an additional clause saying that you can always take him as an ally, no matter what the point restriction is.
Okay,
but
cool.
It just means you you can't take more allies, right? It's like
he specifically says you can take him as an ally in any order army, but you cannot take any other allies in the army in any way, shape, or form.
Yep. Thank you, Garrett. So in a Deepkin list, he benefits from the Tides of Battle, which for the audience who doesn't know, that means on turn one, he gets cover, so he gets plus one save. Turn two, he can run and charge. Turn three, he swings first. Turn four, he can retreat and charge. And turn five, it goes back to, I believe it just goes back to cover or something like that. I believe it goes back to cover. So that's probably the best way to use Gotrek, because I can actually see him having a niche role in Deepkin.
Yeah.
Because Deepkin, they're fast, so they're not exactly they don't really, and Gotrek's slow, so you Gotrek can basically protect your middle or your basically in a specific alley lane. But other than that, there is not much any ways to make Gotrek more effective or speedy than the Deepkin army. And I should mention there's an additional reason as to why. And one of his rules, if you use him in a pitched battle game, he cannot be redeployed through any way possible.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so no bridge, no ferryman, no...
Wait, hold on. Does that mean that he can't be banished?
That is correct.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Any rule that would... So he cannot be set up in reserves and deployed from reserves in any way, and any rule that would make him be placed on the table, he cannot be affected by. So yeah, that would include banish. I would like to say, in relation to endless spells shutting him down, I think people need to start realizing that maybe they should try dispelling endless spells. Because if you had a couple of wizards and there was two endless spells blocking him down, I know that the vortex is an exception with a casting value of 8. You're probably not dispelling that. But with the palisade, which only has a casting value of 5, you could just get rid of that and then he could move on. Or the shackles only have a casting value of 5. You could just get rid of those before they affect him and then move on. So I think that's something that people might need to take a look at if they want to use people like Gortrek.
Yeah. I mean, you're 100% right, Garrett. It's just a lot of the armies that you're going to see him in do not have a lot of wizards. Unless you're going to see him in Cities of Sigmar or Seraphons.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe that's where in Cities of Sigmar you can actually see some use with him, because you can grab a couple of battle mages, or you got the Celestial Huracan. There's they have a bunch of useful wizards in their forces that I think you could just be like, you know what, screw it. I'm not going to cast this turn. I'm going to get rid of those shackles that are chaining down Gortrek so he can go murder people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think about it now, it might actually fit really well in the Seraphon list, just mostly because usually Seraphon armies use the cogs, which is a good way to buff up, speed up a Gotrek. And Seraphons lack the sheer lethality of what Gotrek has in their armies.
Yeah. Really, all they got is river dactyls. I've never been impressed by any of their combat with a Seraphon.
Well, they have dread thorns too.
So what I'm hearing is basically anything but Fire Slayers is a good Gortrek list.
Yeah, it's a trap. It's definitely a trap.
I wouldn't say good, Garrett. I would say
possible.
It's possible, right? Because once again, 520 points for a very slow model that doesn't play to objectives.
But he murders whatever he touches.
Yeah.
So there's that. So if you're lacking a murder whatever he touches, 500, other armies would love to have a 520 point murder whatever he touches.
Of course, we did talk about the Cities of Sigmar army in our last episode. And, the book isn't out yet. I believe the book comes out this weekend, so just a couple of days after our lovely listeners are hearing this episode. However, the War Scrolls have been updated, both in the app and, I believe, on Games Workshop's web store. And with that, a lot of changes have been made. And there's already a lot of usefulness that has come about and a few things that people have discovered. And, Jeremy and I actually went to a tournament yesterday, the day before this recording, so several days before people can hear it. But we had talked about a list that Jeremy had actually developed, which is a very shenanigans-y and is actually perfect against his main army, which is, of course, Fire Slayers, or at least the army that he's seen the most success with. Jeremy, can you tell us a little bit about that, that Cities of Sigmar army that can be a little feel-badsy?
Yeah, it actually really doesn't matter what city you run it in. It just matters. What matters is the Cities of Sigmar got the best sniping hero mechanic in the game, just period. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever has noticed it yet in the audience about how the update to the Flamespire Phoenixes got changed. But effectively, the Flamespire Phoenixes now, which used to never hit the table because the Frostheart, which is just so much better. Well, firstly, like when they die now, they don't count as reinforcement point when they come back, which is great. But what really changed is their fly-by mortal wound mechanic, which was before, you know, pretty lackluster. Now it's just insanely good because what it does is it, you know, when you fly over a unit, or you pick a unit you flew over and you roll dice and it's on a two up, it does a flat amount of mortal wounds. And at the top bracket, it's 5 mortal wounds.
Ouch.
So most heroes are 5 wounds. So right out of the gate, that's pretty threatening to them. And those things move fast. They move 16 inches. And you can do this while running. So you could take, you have a threat range of 22 inches with like a, for a command point, basically, or if you just roll 6 naturally. So those things can, and they're not huge models. So the base isn't that like prohibitive to get past like bubble wraps and so forth. But it is, it makes it interesting because in the games like Fire Slayers, which are going to have to go up the middle of the table, you could use those guys to just kind of fly by over like the characters you want to get rid of and just nuke them off the table. Now, the other thing too that's cool about them is that when they do die, and they do respawn, any leftover wounds that was caused to them is negated. Meaning that like if you have one unit fighting him, and like let's say like most like my Fire Slayers, like the giant death ball, if I have them fighting that one Phoenix and I kill it and then it respawns, I can't do anything to it. So it has another turn to just effectively, like if he gets the initiative or not, to like just fly off and like snipe another hero or stay in combat. It doesn't really matter. The things
Wait, are is that incredible. How it is that how it worked before? Is that when it came back to life, any excess combat went right back on the respawned unit and killed it again?
No, because when it came back, it was removed from play, and then you had to. It was reinforcement points, so it like it was kind of similar, but that they made it very clear. Like when it respawns, it just goes to 0 wound, does not get removed from play. You roll dice on a 4 up, it comes back with 4 wounds, and any leftover wounds from the combat are negated. Basically,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about that, though, is like if you have a double pile in or 2 units nearby, now you can actually just kill it real quick. While before it was like removed from the table and then brought back on at the start of your next hero phase. So it was protected for a whole turn. So there's, you know, that's trade off right there. Well, yeah. Sort of trade off.
Yeah, but it's only 200 points, right? Like that's the thing that's amazing. It's a 200 point flying behemoth that just like. Just deal like you can use this to like a way to bombard like heroes and snipe them out.
I mean, they're pretty good in combat as well. They got like 6 attacks at 4s and 3s, rend 1-2 damage, so they're not awful in combat at 200 points. No.
I don't mean to make people think they're awful in combat. I just see them as like their primary function is to basically fly around and kill like heroes, basically, especially support heroes. Or if you're playing against, you know, Sonesh, and Sonesh loves to just jam like Keepers of Secret in your face. Well, they might not want to do that when you got a basically like a bubble wrapped like a Flamespire Phoenix trio that's just waiting for that to happen so they can just fly over the Keeper of Secret and just nuke it before it gets to like before it really got to do anything in the game, right? I mean, granted, it's not that much of a detriment to Slanesh, since they just respawn a new one after you killed that one. But the point of the matter is that like it's a cool mechanic for Cities of Sigmar to have, and it's very unique and fluffy, which just makes it a double good. Now, in terms of cities, I'm not going to speculate which one for the audience is better with that kind of like combination, because I don't think any of them shine more than the other. So it's really up to you, whatever you want. But I do recommend when you run that list, if you're looking for, as I mentioned, like a good bubble wrap unit option, I think the other like key winner in that book, and sorry if I'm doing a monologue, but is the Longbeards. And I know it's like my dwarf bias coming out again.
I love it.
The Longbeards got drastically better and worse in some ways. They lost their reroll save mechanic, but now they just have a straight up 3 up armor save of shields. So that's effectively almost the same odds, if not a little bit worse. But the cool thing about that is they can still have their six up shrug if you have a Rune Lord, and it's a plus one save. So if you have any mechanic that lets you do mortal wounds on like six up saves and it's not unmodified, then it would trigger off like a five up.
There's like those are gone now that all the order units have been updated. So
Stormcast. No, you're right. Stormcast lost theirs as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's just not a good strategy. But for a reason why I like them is they revamped the grudges that they used to come
with. Hold on. They're not called grudges. It's called old grumblers.
Right. But they're just, or sorry, they're complaints.
Old grumblers.
They're grumbling. They revamped them to basically plus one bravery to all dispossessed within Holy Event 12, or reroll once to wound for all dispossessed units for Event 12. And my personal favorite, which is I think I might even take them in Fire Slayers now, is attempt to dispel an endless spell as if they were a wizard.
Wow, that's really nice, actually. Going back to with Gortrek needing to get rid of those endless spells that are locking down your units.
Exactly. And it doesn't say, you know, unlike other units that aren't wizards that have some sort of unbind ability like Miramar and Banshees, it's not at some sort of explicit range beyond the norm. So they'll be able to do that at 30 inches. And Jeremy, can you remind us again how many points a max unit of Longbeards are?
Yeah, for 30 Longbeards, so it's 30 wounds, it's 270 points.
Wow.
That's great. Now, again, that's 270 points for 30 three-up armor saves. You put them in cover. Again, they're 28 mils. They're not 32 mils, right? That's no, put them in cover. That's a two-up.
Yeah, they're 25 mil bases. So
screw cover. Just put them in Tempestide. Turn one, you have a two-up save.
Yeah, there you go. That's
true. Yeah, there. And you know, if you take the Rune Lord, they get you can give them a six up shrug, and the Rune Lord also gives you a dispel for with a modifier plus two to dispelling a spell, not endless spells. That's the downside of Rune Lords.
The way that everyone the looking at their War Scroll and not playing as a Cities of Sigmar player, but thinking if I were to be in a city a player for Cities of Sigmar, I would run two units of 30 and keep them as like the ultimate bubble wrap. Like, I don't want those two Keeper of Secrets to jump my front line, and I know they can get in range. 30 of these guys. I want, I want to avoid Night Haunt getting on this particular objective turn one. Boom. Run 30 of these guys or 60 of these guys. You know, they just seem fantastic. And really, I'm in love with that Grumbler's rule because of just the way that it's also kind of written.
Right. You know, I thought Dwarden were made of sterner stuff.
Exactly. So for our listeners out there, those complaints that Jeremy mentioned in your hero phase, you can see that this unit is grumbling, and you have to pick one of those three complaints, the bravery, the endless spell dispel, and the reroll wound rolls of one for attacks made by friendly dispossessed near 12. And those are titled. One of them, just like John mentioned, is called "I thought Duradin were made of sterner stuff." Two, the one with rerolling ones to wound was "Put your back into it, Beardling." And then the third one is "There's too much damn magic flying around these days."
That's great.
Oh man, gotta love it. Very, very fluffy. I'm hearing it in a very particular voice. So that's
That's a really efficient 270 point unit. Holy crap! I did not notice those at first.
Yeah, it's all new for the most part. I mean, I knew that they had grudges, but I don't believe the grudges worked in that way at all.
It's great because they kind of nerfed Eternal Guards as well, which used to be the kind of like darling of Battle Nine's Thunder like Order like bubble wrap unit because it was cheap, it was very defensible. But they lost most of their defensive abilities. They're still like plus two saves or something, but they lost their reroll as well. Actually, that's not true. I think they kept their reroll, but they lost their plus one save. Either way, all I know is they went to 170 points or something ridiculous. So like they're crazy more expensive than they used to be. So I'm like, I'm not interested. Like the Eternal Guards just went, boo, sad face.
Yeah, and they just get a plus one to save if they don't move nowadays.
Yeah. So
yeah.
It is what it is, I guess. But hey, we got Longbeards now. The only downside is you have to find those kits. And those kits are hard to come by. Iron Drake's got, well, so the core component is like long beards for bubble wrap, flame hearts, flame spire, phoenixes for basically sniping at heroes. And then if you really want ways to kill infantry, like the Cities of Sigmar options have nothing but options for that. You want to kill them in melee? Here's a bunch of elite swordsmen units. You want to kill them in shooting? Here's a bunch of guns and crossbowmen, right? They're like, they don't lack the problem of killing infantry. What they lack is, in my personal opinion, and this is after reading the book, there's nothing spicy to him. Like there's nothing spicy in the army. They're just going to be very, very, very much like playing Caradon overlords. They're going to sit on the table. They're going to do the thing. And then if you're not on the objectives or if you didn't block them off objectives, like you're going to lose the game, which, I mean, it sounds really stupid when you think about it, Jeremy, that's how every game gets lost. But, it's just, I don't know. I'm not excited about Cities of Sigmar. I was really excited about it, and then I read the book, and I'm less excited about it.
I kind of have a slight opposite reaction, because my reaction is, yes, they're kind of bland, but it's the same blandness that makes the Malign Sorcery artifacts so damn good, is that they're just generic passive buffs to their attack profiles, like great swords getting just a +1 to hit if they're near a hero, so they all of a sudden go to twos and threes. Celestial Hurricanum passing out a +1 to hit. Tempest Lords being able to pass out a +1 to wound from a command ability. The army has so many just kind of like generic bonuses that just work without needing special circumstances, that I feel like they're going to be a very efficient army at accomplishing your task. This happened to me back before Cities, right before Cities of Sigmar came up. I was playing against a mixed order shooting list, and he had +2 to hit on his artillery, and so he was able to just snipe my hero, even though I had lookouts there. Like, it didn't matter. He was hitting on threes instead of twos. And so I feel like with enough pluses to hit, you can counteract a lot of the minuses hit. You can still snipe out heroes with like Hellstorm rocket batteries. You don't need to worry about other people's defensive measures to snipe out people. You don't need to worry about all these things, because like they just get all these generic buffs that take their unit profiles above and beyond what they're originally at from all these stacking abilities. So that's my fear of this book, is they have too many just bland, like not bad, but just good general buffs that you can take advantage of, like +1 to save here, +1 to save there, +1 to hit there, +1 to hit there, like multiple stacking buff abilities.
Well, it's pretty much like GW said in their article last week. They said, we can't wait to see what combos you guys come up with.
Right? Yeah, I feel like this book was not like GW literally said, oh, we didn't bother balancing this book, because we're going to let you break it for us.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong on any of those, Garrett. So like the plus mechanics, you're probably playing against a free, the free people list, or just like a guy of the general, the free people general and so forth. Like those are still there, but the my problem with it is that like literally when you look at the executioner, the hammerers, and the Empire's like double hand dudes, I forgot what they're called, the great swords. You look at them very closely; they're almost the exact identical like four scroll.
Oh yeah,
and that's what I mean by blendness. It's like, come on, like a little bit of flavor, a little bit. Just come on.
Yeah. Okay. I guess what you see, but you're not excited from all these cool thing rules. But like, I'm definitely scared from a balance standpoint. Because I feel like this book has a lot, like the options it has are just like there, and they're just efficient. It is an incredibly efficient book.
Well, and I hear kind of different messages from you guys. From Jeremy, I'm hearing, yeah, I don't know, this is not too exciting because I wanted to play this. And from Garrett, I'm hearing, yeah, this looks scary to see across the table because who knows what kind of craziness might happen.
Yeah, I'm scared for the meta with this, that we're going to get another one of these, like, great. This is just going to, like, negative play experiences, table your opponent before they even get a chance to do anything, kind of armies.
Yeah, I mean, it's, look, like, that's the only way we can get Games Workshop to stop making those, right? Like, it's to have them put them out and then us not buy into it. And then eventually they're, they'll never make those, right? Right? Like Slaanesh, that's exactly what happened with Slaanesh. Right?
Except everybody bought into Slaanesh, and now you can't get away from Slaanesh at any tournament you go to.
Well, yeah, then what they really know is that these kind of things sell the heck out of models. Hey guys, we got some old stock on all this order stuff. Oh, we know. Here, pop out a battle tome. We'll clear out the old inventory.
So what we figured out, Garrett, is that it's not Games Workshop's fault. It's our fault.
No, it's Games Workshop's fault.
Okay.
And of course, right around the corner, we do have the Orc Warclans book, which is going to be coming out in conjunction with the Cities of Sigmar. And just like we talked about in a previous episode, both of these battle tomes are going to be armies that are going to have not a single new model whatsoever, not a single terrain piece, and not a single endless spell associated with them. You know, these are completely meant so that, you know, your Grognard friend who's playing Ninth Age, so you can kick him in the ass and tell him, get with it, nerd, and start playing Age of Sigmar. Or it's meant for people who have old Warhammer Fantasy collections that are collecting dust that don't want to play a game for mutants. And they want to start playing some sort of game run by and managed by Games Workshop again. And so these are perfect opportunities to do that. So, you know, the Orc Warclans, it has not come out yet, but there has been quite a bit of information we have received regarding this, both from not just verifiable leaks, but also individuals who have been able to successfully review it given the NDA release. So there's a lot to talk about here. Garrett, looking at the War Clan rules, both the rules that we've been previewed and the rules that we now have in front of us, what are some of the main things that stand out for you in terms of just the overall aspect of War Clans?
Well, a lot. It's wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess my big overall impressions, I have not been able to get through everything yet. I will say that I have not gotten through all the big WoW stuff. I've just kind of gone over the Iron Jaws and Bone Split separately first. Iron Jaw stuff got some nice simplifications. Bone Splitters got some very necessary improvements. And I'm really excited to see these on the table. That's my initial impression before I dig into details.
Yeah, and I'll cover you for the big WoW, Garrett, because I read that most more than anything. As an Iron Jaw player, I was more interested into that. But anyway, we can jump straight into what the new allegiance mechanics for Iron Jaws is.
Well, I want to hear John's initial impressions from what he's gathered through whatever before we jump in.
Whatever osmosis I have looking this over. Yeah, what can I say? Orc War Clans. I know a lot of Orc players who have been, shall we say, keeping the faith for a long time. I'm looking at you, Scott, amongst other people. So there's a lot of cool people out there playing Orc, and to see Iron Jaws and Bone Splitters together, I think the thing that kind of caught my eye is how GW's talking about it basically being two battle tomes. And unlike previous battle tomes that have kind of combined different clans or factions together, where they've still all been one big faction, here these two sub factions can quote ally into each other, or they can be combined into the Great WoW. But the fact that they have a little bit of an ally mechanic is kind of interesting. It's different to me. So that was my initial impression.
Yeah, I like that as opposed to the Skaven, where you have this awkward thing where you want to take Pestilence as battle line, but you can't ally in other people. This actually lets you take your Iron Jaws and ally in Bone Splitters. Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, I almost feel that was, you know, kind of thing that they added based on feedback from other books.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's also important to note that the book does allow for, you know, it does have a combination of, you know, of course, many different armies as a part of it. And there's a lot of big things to note regarding changes. Like if you have Iron Jaws, you know, you're not going to have the same type of smashing and bashing rule. But then, you know, you get expanded rules in a variety of other ways too. You know, I'm looking right now at some of these clans, and a lot of the clans just look really fun here. You know, as an example, there is Bloodtooth clan, right? And their main ability is +1 to run and charge for all of their units, which is great. And then their command ability is break through the line. And you pick a unit for within 24 inches of or you pick a friendly Bloodtooth unit that's fought in the combat phase and is wholly within 24 inches of a friendly Bloodtooth hero. That unit can make a normal move but can't run or retreat. I think that could be pretty useful.
Well, it requires you to kill the unit and not be within 3 inches of anything.
That's fair. That's fair.
But okay. in terms of humor, the book is filled with this. Like, yeah, you can look at the third, not the Iron Sons, not the Bloodtooth, but the Choppas, or
yeah, Choppas.
Choppas.
Their command trait is like checked out. And then, like, the whole point is, like, their entire scheme is a bunch of checkers. Like, they're just, like as in, like, the boss is, like, is checked out. Like, he's got the mark, you know. It's, like, he's got enough checks.
So he's, like, super into ska.
Yeah, basically. And they're, like, a bunch of punks. Like, that's the whole, like, kind of, like, mechanic of how – even, like, they actually did a good job at capturing, like, kind of, like, the feel of the – like, kind of, like, being punks in Age of Sigmar would be like. And then, like – and like the War Chanter like abilities and new ones are called like Killer Beat, and it does like total
and like no, and like, it's definitely just ska then.
And then like they got like Fix and Beat, you know, like healing. It's a healing ability. I don't know. It's just the book is full of like humor. I mean, you have to. It's destruction, but for my personal favorite change to Iron Jaws is that. They made him faster. So that was cool. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And you can't go by without mentioning these mount traits either, right? Biggin, fastin, meanin, heavyin, loudin, weirdin.
Yeah. My favorite one I found so far was, where is it? Shout at the magic or something.
Yeah.
It's a trait for one of the clans for blood. They basically whenever an enemy casts a spell, you can use this command ability on a unit that has 10 or more models near the caster, and they can just unbind it.
Yeah,
they just shout at it.
All I can think of is that meme from The Simpsons with Grandpa Simpsons, like old man yells at cloud. Oh, that's awesome. Now, I got to say, with and of course, we've all talked about this, and maybe our listeners aren't fully aware, but there are some things that just terrify the hell out of, I know, both myself and Jeremy with Orc War Clans. And it's not actually based around Iron Jaws. It's about the big old heck and love that comes to the Savage Orcs, to the Bone Splitters here.
Well, now, that particular clan is the one that has Shout Down to Magic, by the way.
Yeah, it does. hence the reference. There's going to be quite a bit here that we can really look into, and I just almost called them Iron Jaws. The Bone Splitters. There is a clan as a part of the Bone Splitters that ignore Rend basically as a clan, which is terrifying to me. It also ignores shrug saves of any sort, which would mean no death save, no no mystical save, no save because you're a unit of 30 Hearthguard Berserkers, neither hero.
It's actually brought up some fun little things. Like I was just thinking about this. The Phoenix, when it comes back to life, if it says it negates all of the wounds, then this would actually ignore that ability. Unless
oh my god.
Because it says it ignores anything that negates wounds. And so if this says, if the Phoenix says negate all the wounds that, you know, would normally be applied to it, this would ignore that. So they could actually murder a Phoenix that just came back to life with the bleed over attacks.
Wait, can they murder Gotrek that way too then?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And Marathi.
Oh my gosh.
It's called strength through purpose. Ignore ethereal. And so that was ignore ethereal specifically means fuck you, Night Haunt. And then it says, and any abilities that ignore wounds and have no effect, any abilities that ignore wounds have no effect on Daka foot attacks. And it is the Daka foot,
Drop foot.
Bone Splitter clan. Drakfoot. You know, I'm bad at pronouncing things. I came here to lead, not to read.
That's unfortunate. I know. I did not vote for you.
Well, good thing this wasn't a democracy.
Yikes. This is the wrong podcast for that.
Anyways, so Jeremy, I'd be interested to see in more detail your thoughts on the Iron Joe. Specific, like, what do you mean by they got faster? I'm not seeing much from their General's Handbook stuff that actually made him go faster.
The so they got the ability when they take wounds in any phase to move D6 inches forward.
I thought about that, and it's okay. Like, the way I thought about it was, if you're 9 inches away, if you're over 9 inches away, and you get shot, like, you're basically going to be charging them anyways, probably. That extra D6 inches, I don't see being particularly that much faster.
Well, so the reason why it's faster is because they used to have that trick with the Iron Fist Battalion, but they it didn't affect like a Maw Crusher, or it did not affect like basically a Maw Crusher. And there's a couple tricks with the Weird Knob Shaman, where in your hero phase you can basically cause mortal wounds on your own Maw Crusher and then heal him with the War Chanter to give him like extra distance, and then you can Mighty Destroyer him. So he can get a free move. So basically you can get like, I don't know, like almost an extra 20-inch move in the first turn with that combination.
Yeah, so I just feel like that was not really necessary, because with the Mighty Destroyer, you're probably moving him 30 inches anyways. You don't need that D6, so.
It's convenient for like, because right now they basically lost that for... They lost the Iron Fist Battalion mechanic, so like now they just reincorporated like as a straight up allegiance. And the reason why I say it's cool also is it makes like a, what's the word I'm looking for? In the Grand Wa has the same ability, so you could do it for Bone Splitters too.
Oh, okay, that's pretty cool.
So there's just like I. Dynamic, yeah, you're right. It's like, well, then, you know, it doesn't seem that exciting, but like, you know, when you're basing an army around four inch movement characteristic models, those extra just inches are just kind of crucial. But I was gonna say the other major change they did to Iron Jaws, as you mentioned, Gary, they've simplified everything. They finally made brutes cheap. Like, brutes went from like the more expensive battle line option to like the cheaper battle line option, without losing it that much mechanically, but they're still being overshadowed by Hard Boys, which just got so much better now than they used to be.
It was so much more expensive though.
Yeah, 180 versus 140, but you get an extra 5 wounds and like less attacks, but you get like you get better bravery, you get better charge consistency. So I don't know. For me, it's just like it's a Hard Boys is just a great like battle line option. And then the one thing they did do that was pretty cool to me was that they finally gave a way for Iron Jaws to fight some magic, and that's mostly in the form of the mount trait, giving a Maw Crusher the ability to ignore all spells and endless spells cast at him on a 4+, which I thought like when I played Iron Jaws. And I will go back in time here a long time ago when they first came out, the codex that came out like almost immediately after was Disciples of Tzeentch. And I cannot tell you how much that mount trait would have been appreciated during that very grim, dark period of my life.
When Tzeentch magic casting was dominating the board.
Yeah, when you're taking 60 mortal wounds in hero phase. Yeah, that was not a fun time.
Does that mean you have a bunch of Oryx on the shelf there, kind of ready to drop some armies as soon as the Battle Tome is out?
Yeah, but I don't. I actually want to. My next project is not going to be my Oryx. I want to work on my Flesh Eaters. Mm. I want to finish my non gristle gore blister skin army.
What army don't you play?
Good one.
That's a good question. That's a very good question.
Nighthawk, because you sold him all to Alex?
No, no, he's got a full Nighthawk army. I have borrowed it before. Hold on. We actually have to think about this one. Okay. Technically, Jeremy doesn't own a Gloomspike Gitz army. He bought one, built it, got it commission painted for his friend to force his friend to play Age of Sigmar, which is legit, like, superpower move, by the way. But, he doesn't.
I don't have ogres.
Boom.
Yay.
You own motor. No. He's got a Stonehorn.
Nope. I've seen I gave it away to Frank.
You gave it away to Frank, and you also don't own a Tomb Kings army. And they're a legal army. They are in the General's Handbook with points.
Jesus.
You have all five Chaos Gods, right? Demons or mortals?
Yep. Both. I have all of them.
Anyways, back on topic. Sorry, I just heard flesh eater courts, and I was like, Jesus. Anyways, I do want to point out two of these spells that they have are insane for casting value 5, Brain Bursta and Mighty Edbutt. Bursta is one of those classic roll 2d6, beat their bravery. But if you beat their bravery, you do d6 mortal wounds. If you fail to beat their bravery, you do d3. So it's like,
oh my gosh.
Right? That's insane. And then the Mighty Edbutt is casting value 5, pick an enemy hero within 16, they suffer D3. If they're a wizard, D6. Like, it's a souped up arcane bolt that does D6 against wizards. Like, holy crap.
Those are both nice, except for the 16-inch range, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's 2 inches shorter than arcane bolt, so it's, like, not awful. And you throw in a ban when they're 22.
Yes. Those are all nice, Garrett, except they're on wizards that can only cast one spell a turn. So, I mean, yeah, they're cool. They're cool.
Throw them on a Balewind. You can cast two. I'm telling you, Balewind is an amazing endless spell that people do not play enough. Turn your level 1 wizard into a level 2 wizard with an extra 6 inches for a mere 40 points. It's amazing, people.
Yeah, and, you know, even that, I mean, you mentioned the level 1 wizard, Jeremy, but... you know, I believe some of those wizards have a stock spell that doesn't count as them using a spell.
Yeah, they're green puke, but they got rid of the Foot of Gork, so...
They did get rid of Foot of Gork.
I don't feel like... Yeah, those are all nice gifts, but they took away the meanest spell, which was Foot of Gork.
That's fine. If you could get it to go off.
It wasn't that hard.
It was a 10. You needed an 8 because you had plus 2. It's a 10. And then for it to chain, it's a 4 up to chain. Like, rolling an 8 on 2d6 is a pretty hard cast still.
Yeah, believe me, as somebody who's been chasing some casting level 8s with my Skaven, even with a plus 1, I seem to miss it more often than not. Looking at you, Death Frenzy.
Death Frenzy's a 7.
What?
Death Frenzy for 7.
Oh my god. Here we go. Robbed. We was robbed. Oh my lord.
Dreaded Death Frenzy is an 8, I think, but Death Frenzy is
You're right. No, Dreaded Death Frenzy is, I think, an 8.
Yeah, we'll go with that. We'll assume that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, that's the same.
Thanks, Garrett. You can't let me just slide on one of these once.
Nope, okay. Never.
It literally would not be Garrett if that was the case. Like,
you know, the best part of this is I know John doesn't own a single Warbringer, so.
How do you know?
he was borrowing a Warbringer.
My Warp Seer is a Warbringer Warp Seer conversion. He can swap hands.
Yeah, that's right, because they have the same weapon loadout. It's just the orb or not.
Yep.
All right.
But back to orcs. Let's talk about bone splitters for
Let's talk about bone splitters. Wow. Do bone splitters look awesome?
They do. They really, really do. They are going to be a spicy meatball.
I knew you were going to say that. I swear to God. Like, I was literally thinking about... Okay, anyway, keep going.
I mean, John, jump in whenever you want, but I'm just going to start talking. One of the, like, the extra... the extra attacks on their war scrolls. First of all, before I saw the leaks, that's the first thing I noticed was all their guys just got more attacks in general. So they're having... That was necessary for them because they were, like, a high point model unit because they had 2 wounds. So they were just like not having the attacks that you needed for the number of bodies you're going to have. But now that they're like, you know, up to 4 or 5 attacks a model for not super expensive guys, you're able to pump out a lot of attacks. The first thing that sticks out to me is they apparently have a bunch of abilities that lets you on unmodified sixes generate an additional hit. If you stack those, they keep gen. So if you have 2 abilities, you end up generating 3 hits. I think that is a fantastic clarification for them, because I did notice that they had 2 abilities that did that. And then they have the 6-up mortal wound save. Here's one thing. Instead of getting a terrain piece, at the start of the battle round, half your units can move 5 inches. So you can just move 5 inches up the board at the start of the turn. So
is it five inches?
Yeah, it's 5 inches. There's a command trait to make it 8 inches.
Got it. Okay.
Now, were these the ones that had the ability to destroy a terrain piece before?
No, that was Iron Jaws, and that was a battalion.
Okay. And that's gone, I assume?
That's gone.
Kind of.
Okay. They can shut down. Yeah. But just they have a lot. They seem to have a lot of movement tricks now. They got a lot of nice abilities for dealing with, like, all of their stuff for anti-monster stuff just got modernized and are just efficient now. The bone splitters are looking really, really cool, honestly.
I love the fact that they got the Wogmonger rule, which is basically the Fungoid Shaman on a CP. You get an extra CP on a 4-up in the hero phase.
Oh, yeah. And then they also have Dead Cunning as a command trait, where at the start of the first battle round, you just get D3 CP.
Yep.
Like, they have a bunch of abilities. And I could probably talk at length, but I'll let Jeremy jump in and start talking about the big wah.
Yeah, the big wah. I've been waiting to hear about this. First off, before Jeremy starts with this, the big wah is available to both Iron Jaws and Bone Splitters, correct?
So I'll expand on that, John.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can take, yes, and think of it like as a separate army. It's complete with all, like, Cities of Sigmar, except that instead of like all, you know, the Cities of Sigmar models, it's just Iron Jaws and Bone Splitters. And they function as a completely they don't share any of the allegiance abilities from the Bone Splitters, Iron Jaws, and the Big Wall. But they do get, like, if your general is a Bone Splitter model, then you can pick a command trait from the Bone Splitter table. If your general is Iron Jaw, same thing. So you can still get like the cool things. The problem is, and for those who are I'm sure people are gonna ask this, and I'm gonna tell you my opinion on that. If you pick a command trait, let's say like for Iron Jaws, there's one that lets you use Mighty Destroyer by spending a command point. Mighty Destroyer is a command ability you gain as an allegiance ability for playing Iron Jaws. If you play Big Wah, you don't, even though you get that command trait, you don't get to do Mighty Destroyer. Like, so like just for people, for the audience that watch. But yes, you can play Iron Jaws and Bone Splitters in the same army. And they function, their battle line, they function exactly as the one cohesive army. Their ally option is Gloomspite Gits, so you can ally in some Gloomspites if you want. But the big change is basically they made it so that Bone Splitter mechanics and Iron Jaw mechanics from their allegiance are kind of molded into one allegiance mechanic. So what I mean is there is basically you're going to need a D30 and you generate wah points at the start of your hero phase. These wah points are either fixed or random dependent on like the criteria. And I won't go too far into, you know, who generates them. But the point is you can easily, based on army builds, generate like basically like 5 to 7 plus D6 wah points at the start of the hero phase. And every increment of 4 basically gives you a cumulative buff. So like the first 4, it is you get to, when you take a mortal wound, you get to move when you take a wound, you get to move D6 inches as long as you're more than 9 inches away. Sounds familiar, Iron Jaw mechanic, but that applies to everybody. So that includes Bone Splitters in the army. Then on an 8, you get to basically... have access to this new magic ability that lets the wizards in your army drain the amount of WA points you have by D3 to get plus one casting, or by D6 to get plus two to cast. So it makes those, like, you know, level eight spells fairly castable at the expense of maybe losing some WA points. At basically 12, you get, I believe, plus one charge. At 16,
no, that's the shrug save is at 12.
Oh,
at 6 you get the magic ability, and 8 you get plus one. So six you get something, and then at 8 you get the plus one charge, which is an Iron Jaw Allegiance ability.
Got it. And then 12 you get the shrug save, which is the bone splitter mechanic. And then at 16 you get plus one to hit, and then it's 20 you get plus one to wound for your army, like, just
wow,
for everybody.
Wow, that is strong.
And on the 24 you get to unlock the big wall command ability, which is basically plus one attack for your entire army, but you have a chance of losing, like, either all your WA points or none of your WA points. So use sparingly, but it is.
Well, and that's a can use ability too. So when you're even at 24, you can hold yourself and keep the plus one to hit, plus one to wound, and, you know, not burn off the plus one attack till it's critical.
That's right. For the most part, like, one of the biggest gripe I've had with Iron Jaws was that they didn't have ignore mortal wound mechanics. Which you can get in the big Wallace. Like, you sacrifice Mighty Destroyers, bashing and bashing or whatever, and then, but you get, like, this, all these other options. So, and then also you could super, you know, you can add in Bone Splitters in an Iron Jaws army, because that's the way I think about it.
Yeah.
And those Bone Splitter options are really, really, really good. Like, having Arrow Boys sit behind Hard Boys. Like, Arrow Boys are terrifying to, like, anything that's a monster on the table. So, like, they're just phenomenal. It's just a phenomenal, like, allegiance mechanic. I wish they did that for Skaven instead of, like, what we did for Skaven, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's like, maybe an overall Skaven tide mechanic would have been fun.
Yeah. That's cool. The one thing I will mention, though, like, the battalions, I believe, are legal, but some of them don't really work in the Grey Wall anyway. So, like, once again, there's one for Iron Jaws that lets you use Mighty Destroyers. But, and obviously, like, that's not an option if you play a big wall. I'm hoping they fack it to clarify, like, what happens. But the point I'm saying is that not all the battalions will work in the big wall effectively.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely have to see how the book ends up. That is going to be it for us tonight. For all of our listeners, do feel free to like us on Facebook, rate us on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We look forward to talking a lot more in length about Orc War Clans and, some of the ins and outs of that, especially if Jeremy starts up one of those Orc War Clan armies that he's already got started out. That being said, this is Alex, Garrett, John, and Jeremy, as per normal, wishing you guys a great evening.
Wah!
All right, well, that was it, I guess.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.